Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you for joining us this Veterans Day weekend. As we remember and honor our veterans on this weekend, let's remember and understand that the wars they fought in, let's stand with their families. We never had to fight against people, all of whom hated us and wanted us all dead. Israeli soldiers who are fighting for their country, that's what they're facing. And how does one make peace with someone who hates you and wants all of you dead? This is not the time for Israel to lighten up in their fight to kill the people who attacked them. And this past Friday was the Marine Corps birthday. Happy birthday to all the Marines, including Skip. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. How did you celebrate the Marine Corps birthday, Skip? Push-ups?
Well, no. Well, we do those all the time, right? I mean, that's just same old, but No, I celebrated with great exuberance and astronomical pride, as I always do. So yeah, that's the way we are. And of course, you know, my Marine buddies, you know, we send texts back and forth. Happy birthday, Marine, you know, all of that. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And hey, here's a good chance to touch base with your fellow buddies. Here's what we have for you today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss Veterans Day. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Then Army vet Mike Rogers, who served our nation in many ways and dealt with many major issues. He'll join us to discuss some of our issues today. Next, retired businessman and author Ed Fuller will discuss his new book and some national issues. Then Quentin Roberts will discuss last weekend's Service Academy football games and where Army beat Air Force. And Marines Gil and Skip will present the Border in Books.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. First, the news. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Secretary of State Antony Blinken warned Israel last week that it risked destroying an eventual possibility for peace unless it acts swiftly to improve humanitarian conditions in Gaza for Palestinian civilians as it intensifies its war against Hamas. In a blunt call for Israel to pause military operations in the territory to allow for the immediate and increased delivery of assistance, Blinken said the current situation would drive Palestinians toward further radicalism and effectively end prospects for any eventual resumption of peace talks to end the conflict. Quote, there will be no partners for peace if they're consumed by humanitarian catastrophe and alienated by any perceived indifference to their plight, unquote. Blinken said even as the call for temporary pause without the release by Hamas of Israeli hostages was swiftly rejected by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said Israel would be going with full steam ahead.
Our government's advice is stupid. The poor people of Gaza picked Hamas to rule them. They teach their children to hate and want to kill all Jews. And now that they attacked and killed many Jewish civilians, we need to be worried about them? Were we worried about the citizens of Japan when we bombed them as a way of ending the war? And how do you have a peace treaty with people who hate you and want to kill you? Keep fighting, Israel.
And Israeli military strikes killed multiple civilians a week ago at a UN shelter and hospital in the main combat zone in the Gaza Strip as the assault intensified on the besieged enclave's Hamas rulers, while the United States and Arab partners disagreed on the need for an immediate ceasefire. Large columns of smoke rose from Gaza as Israel's military said it had encircled Gaza City, the target of its offensive to crush Hamas.
I hope you all know that Hamas has hundreds of miles of tunnels from which they attack Israel, and many of these tunnels are under hospitals and schools, so they can blame Israel when Israel hits one of their military strong points. This is crazy.
And the Pentagon announced plans to build a more modern nuclear bomb, 24 times as powerful as the ones dropped on Japan, to replace America's aging stockpile. The new gravity bomb, designed to be dropped from an airplane, will be designated as B-61-13 and would replace the old B-61-7s, which date to the 1980s and 90s. The maximum yield would be 360 kilotons. The Pentagon said the military needed to modernize to maintain a deterrence force against China and Russia, and to give the president more options to strike harder and large area military targets.
Well, we definitely need to modernize and definitely have many serious enemies. It's a shame we've taken so long to modernize.
And late last month, Cornell University was put on high alert and state police were called in to protect Jewish students threatened with graphic violence on a university message board this weekend. The FBI was alerted as well. One message threatened a shooting of Jew pigs, another called for raping Jewish girls, and yet another exhorted students to follow Jewish students home and slit their throats. New York Governor Kathy Hochul called in the state police, who kept guard over buildings where Jewish students gathered. The Justice Department and Homeland Security are now working with colleges to track anti-Semitic threats.
This is reasonable. Terrorists do support each other, and all terrorists should be jailed for a very long time. I do think it's interesting that our president, along with other terrorists, are proposing that we stop anti-Muslim movements, of which there are none.
And former acting commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, Mark Morgan, expressed concerns about the unsecured southern border and the potential for a terrorist attack in the United States. He cited the recent attack in Israel as a wake-up call, highlighting the ongoing threat of global terrorism and the intelligence failures that occurred. Quote, "The answer is absolutely, and this is what I keep saying," Morgan said when asked if the U.S. could experience attacks similar to Israel. "You don't have to be a border security expert to understand that we have a national security crisis happening in our southern border. It's just common sense," unquote.
Well said, Commissioner Morgan. I believe that thousands of terrorists have crossed the border and are now in our country, with more coming every day. Why wouldn't they be coming?
And they don't need tunnels to do it, do they, Colonel?
No, they don't.
Our Space Force and Air Force safely terminated an unarmed Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile over the Pacific Ocean earlier this month after a test launch experienced an unknown issue. A test launch from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California went awry due to an anomaly, according to a press release from the service. The cause of what went wrong with the nuclear-capable missile is still being investigated. A launch analysis group is forming to investigate the cause. The Minuteman III, made by Boeing, is an intercontinental ballistic missile fired from land that forms one leg of our nuclear triad, the combination of land, sea, and air weapons that can deliver a nuclear payload. It has a range of more than 6,000 miles and can travel at speeds of up to 15,000 miles per hour.
We have to keep doing these tests so that we can be sure that our missiles will work should we ever need them. I hope we won't.
And finally, Russia unleashed a wave of nighttime drone and missile attacks across 10 of Ukraine's 24 regions as they prepare for another winter of infrastructure bombardment by the Kremlin's forces. Ukraine's Air Force said it intercepted 24 of 38 Shahed drones and one Ka-59 cruise missile launched by Russia. The attacks caused fires in homes and public buildings, especially in the southern Kherson region, which Moscow has increasingly targeted in recent weeks, emergency services said. Quote, "We understand that as winter approaches, Russian terrorists will attempt to cause more harm," Ukraine President Zelensky said.
About the only thing Russia can count on to be effective in attacking Ukraine is drones. The Russian military is a mess. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. I encourage you, check cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Frontlines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Army vet and former FBI agent Mike Rogers. At ease, troops, take a break.
Fresh, flash, frozen, from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. for the servicemen and women of this great country. We are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your home defense tip of the week. Criminals love the cover of darkness. It hides them and provides a tactical advantage and cover for them to launch an attack. Avoid dark alleys and unlit parking lots. When possible, always park under a light and avoid areas with a reputation for high crime. Remember, if you can't see the bad guy, then you can't avoid his ambush. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It's 20 minutes after the hour, and you're in formation listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. Troops, this Saturday is Veterans Day. As some of you may know, I taught American government at community college for 15 years. A question I'd asked the first day of class was, why do we celebrate the 4th of July? In 15 years, I had only one student who knew. Our youngsters know virtually nothing about our history, and that's horrible. So let me review the history of Veterans Day. Veterans Day is actually the third of 3 days on which we in the United States remember our veterans. The first is Armed Forces Day, which is the third Saturday in May, and most people don't even know about it, much less celebrate it. On this day, we honor those who presently serve in our military, active duty, National Guard, and reserves. They do deserve our honor and respect. The second one is Memorial Day, which now is the last Monday in May. It focuses to honor those who died while in our military service, though we often honor those who have served in our military and are no longer with us, regardless of when they served or when they died. Veterans Day, originally known as Armistice Day, is a federal holiday in the U.S. observed annually on November 11th for honoring military veterans of our armed forces. It coincides with holidays in other countries that mark the anniversary of the end of the fighting in World War I. Most hostilities of that war formally ended at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, when the armistice with Germany went into effect. World War I didn't actually end until the peace treaty was signed on June 28, 1919, but the fighting was over. Armistice Day reasonably recognized and honored those military people who died as a consequence of World War I. At the urging of major U.S. veterans organizations, Armistice Day was renamed Veterans Day in 1954 so that the veterans of World War II in Korea could be honored on the same day. Here's how that happened. You see, in 1945, World War II veteran Raymond Weeks from Birmingham, Alabama, had the idea to expand Armistice Day to celebrate all veterans, not just those who died in World War I. Weeks led a delegation to General Dwight Eisenhower, who supported the idea of a National Veterans Day. Weeks led the first national celebration in 1947 in Alabama and annually until his death in 1985. President Reagan honored Weeks at the White House with the Presidential Citizenship Medal in 1982. As the driving force for the national holiday, Elizabeth Dole, who prepared the briefing for President Reagan, determined Weeks as the Father of Veterans Day. U.S. Representative Ed Reese from Kansas presented a bill establishing the holiday through Congress. President Dwight Eisenhower signed the bill into law on May 26, 1954. Congress amended the bill on June 1, 1954, replacing Armistice Day with Veterans Day, and it's been known as Veterans Day ever since. This day was commemorated in 1921 with a burial of an unknown soldier from World War I in Arlington National Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia. Other countries who had lost soldiers in the conflict, such as Italy and Portugal, conducted similar ceremonies that year. The previous year, unknown soldiers had been interred in Westminster Abbey in London, England, and at the Arc de Triomphe in Paris, France. Ceremonies are held each year at the Tomb of the Unknowns, and the floral tributes are placed at the graves of servicemen and women at memorials throughout the country. Naturalization ceremonies have become an important part of the day's activities. In Britain, Canada, Australia, and France, November 11th is observed to honor both the veterans of World War I and II, and in Britain, the second Sunday of November is observed as Remembrance Sunday, and in Canada, November 11th is observed as Remembrance Day. In Britain and the Commonwealth countries, and in countries of Europe, It's common to observe 2 minutes of silence at 11 a.m. on November 11th, the time and date of the World War I armistice in 1918. Poppies have long been associated with World War I memorials through the poem The Flanders Field by John McCrae, and in several countries, paper poppies are sold to raise money for the support of veterans and are worn on the label as a sign of remembrance. On November 11th, 1919, President Woodrow Wilson issued a message to a countryman on the first Armistice Day in which he expressed what he felt the day meant to Americans. Quote, "A year ago today, our enemies laid down their arms in accordance with an armistice which rendered them impotent to renew hostilities and gave the world an assured opportunity to reconstruct its shattered order and to work out in peace a new and more unjust international relations. The soldiers and people of the European allies had fought and endured more than 4 years to uphold the barrier of civilization against the aggressions of armed force. We ourselves had been in the conflict something over a year and a half," end quote. He concluded with a statement, "To us in America, the reflections of Armistice Day will be filled with solemn pride in the heroism of those who died in the country's service and the gratitude for the victory, both because of the thing from which it freed us and because of the opportunity it gave America to show her sympathy for peace and justice in the councils of nations," end quote. Because it's a federal holiday, some American workers and students may have Veterans Day off from work or school. Legally, 2 minutes of silence is recommended to be observed at 2:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Let's be sure our families and especially our children know about Veterans Day and show their appreciation and respect for veterans that day. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
Today, I want to take you on a journey to a rather unusual chapter in military history, the Great Emu War of 1932 in Australia. It's a story that might sound like something out of a comedy, but it actually happened, and it reveals the unexpected challenges and absurdities that can arise in the world of warfare. In the early 1930s, Australia was facing an unexpected foe. Emus, which are large flightless birds that are native to Australia, they're the second largest living bird in the world after the ostrich. And large groups of these flightless birds were causing massive damage to crops, leading to financial hardship for farmers. The situation had become so dire that the government decided to intervene, and the Emu War was declared. Now, in a somewhat bizarre turn of events, the Australian government deployed soldiers armed with two Lewis machine guns to tackle the emu problem. The plan was straightforward. The soldiers would hunt down and eliminate the emus with the aid of their powerful firearms. However, what followed was nothing short of comical. The emus provided to be elusive and agile, making it difficult for the soldiers to effectively target them. In fact, emus often outran the machine gun fire and scattered in all kinds of directions, rendering the military operation largely ineffective. It's said that the emus appeared to be laughing at the soldiers' efforts as they evaded capture and continued their crop-raiding antics. So despite the soldiers' best efforts, the emu population persisted, and the government eventually had to admit defeat. In the end, only a small fraction of the emus were culled, and the war against these featherless foes was officially abandoned. The Great Emu War is a unique and humorous footnote in military history, illustrating the unpredictability of warfare and the unexpected challenges that can arise, even when the enemy seems as unlikely as a group of birds. It's a reminder that history is full of surprising and absurd moments that can make us smile, even when discussing the serious subject of war. Australia's Great Emu War serves as a reminder that history is not just about the battles and heroism, but also about the quirky, unexpected, and sometimes downright humorous events that have shaped our world. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I really enjoy your comments. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Army and FBI vet Mike Rogers. Then we'll talk with author Ed Fuller. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three. Then stand at ease.
As veterans, we at Concerned Veterans for America know defending freedom comes at a high cost. Our lawmakers should consider that cost when they send troops to war.
If wars don't serve our national interest, our brave men and women shouldn't be deployed into harm's way. Our troops should not be in combat because Congress doesn't want to make tough decisions about military engagement.
Find out how you can join the movement to end our nation's endless wars at cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to Vetted Veterans Program's mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Truth, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Truth, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Army vet Mike Rogers. Mike also served our nation in the FBI and in Congress, where he led the House Intelligence Committee. He's a guy who clearly loves our nation and understands the threats. Welcome to the show, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
Denny, it's so great to be back with you. Thank you for having me.
Mike, let's start by telling us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
You know, service was important. I would have been the third generation in our family to serve in the military. And, you know, that's something that is imparted on you when you're growing up, the importance of service. My brother was at West Point, had just graduated from West Point and was off serving in the Army. My father was a tech sergeant in the Air Force during the Korean War. Uncles in World War II. We had grandparents on my wife's side who were submariners in World War II and served all the way up through Korea. And so, you know, it was an important thing. And I really did believe passionately that America needed people to sign up and stand tall. And that's really why I did it and don't regret it. And by the way, my son now is in the United States Navy. He's the fourth generation of Rogers. So we're proud of that legacy of service to the country.
Sounds good. Later on, you joined the FBI. Was it immediately on getting out of the Army or how did that work?
Yeah, so I was coming up on my first term. I had always wanted to be an FBI agent. I thought that that was two things I wanted to do. I wanted to chase Soviet spies. Remember, the Soviet Union was still alive back then. Or I wanted to chase, the traditional mafia gangsters. And so I got fortunate. I went through the process, got in. At that time, they were, you know, about 10% of our class were former military. So they appreciated military service and the leadership you get and the discipline that you get and that you can function in a lot of environments. So that worked well for me. Got accepted and I got to go work and chase gangsters in Chicago. So I was working organized crime mobsters from Chicago. And I thought, man, if they would have told me I had to do this for free, I probably would have done it. Yeah, they didn't, though.
My father's brother was a career FBI agent. He entered about 1940, just as World War II was starting. And retired in the early 60s. But I admired him, and I don't remember all the stories he told, but he was proud of his service.
As he should be. You know, those were the important years for the Bureau. They were building up their credibility, and we have all seen of late, unfortunately, you can cash that credibility in pretty easily. But all of those, you know, when I came in, I knew we were standing on the shoulders of giants who had come before us and forged this really first-rate, world-class investigative agency. And I, too, was proud to be a part of it.
Well, I think my uncle is spinning in his grave right now. Anyway.
Yeah, I guarantee you he's spinning in his grave. I talked to a lot of agents, and they are not amused with where the Department of Justice is trying to pull the FBI. It's just not good. And we're going to have to change that. When I get to the United States Senate, Denny, I promise you we're going to work on that.
Believe me, I agree with you. That is one of several very high priorities. Okay, then at some point you decided to run for Congress. Was that right after the FBI?
You know, I had worked a really important case there and it was starting to take off. I had developed some really important sources of information, inside organization type things. And I thought, you know, maybe this is the time. I tried the reactive side. And by the way, I loved every minute of it. It was the hardest thing I ever did is lay my credentials on the desk on the way out the door. Pretty tough thing to do for me because I just love being an agent. I love the work. I love the fidelity, bravery, integrity of who the agency was. But I thought maybe I should try this proactive side. So I actually ran for the state Senate and was fortunate enough to win. in then ran for in the United States Congress in the year 2000, which I also was fortunate enough to win, but it was the closest race in the country that year.
Well, I understand in 2000, I ran for sheriff of Kent County, Michigan, but I came in second. So therefore, by a small margin.
Well, thank you for putting your name on the ballot. People don't realize it's important to try to get out there and stand up for what you believe. And it's not easy, as you saw. And it's just, you know, it's never an easy thing.
So you ran for Congress. Tell us about your time there. That had to be an interesting and challenging period.
I always say I served in two completely different Congresses. I was there on 9/11 and was actually going into the budget to pitch an idea that I had, a hearing in front of the chairman that morning, to force people who borrowed out of the Social Security Trust Fund to pay it back the first year, the first thing, to try to curtail their ability to get into that, get their hands in that fund and run up the debt and deficit. And when those planes crashed into the building, Dennis, everything changed. I mean, everything changed. We refocused to, A, first of all, you know, hunker down, make sure that there wasn't anything else coming, and the process of Congress going through all of that. And I don't know if you remember, it may have been the last bipartisan moment ever in Capitol Hill, but all of us that night, members of the House, went on the House steps and together sang the Star Spangled Banner. It was a pretty moving moment, and we did that because we thought it was important to tell the world that we're here, you're not going to get at us, and we are bigger and stronger than your hate. You know, you can tear down our buildings, but man, you can't kill our spirit. And so that's really what we did. And since then, I worked a lot, or after that moment, I worked a lot on national security issues, really, really important. And I got on the Intelligence Committee, which was a labor of love for me, and eventually became chairman of that committee. So I oversaw all 17 agencies, about $78 billion, although at the height of the conflict, which tells you you can do this, I was able to take out $7.5 billion, almost 10% of that budget, and not cut muscle or bone. We were still doing great things, you know, to bad people, but I was able to find a lot of waste in there. And so, you know, helped the mission. I believed I was supposed to support the people we were asking to do really hard things with the tools and resources and policy that they needed, but at the same time, made sure we were doing it within the confines of the law. As I said, really a rewarding experience.
You mean you can actually save money at times, even if there's something critical going on, just by being a good steward of it? Something like that?
Absolutely. And so when people say, oh, it can't be done and we have to hurry up and do this without looking at either offsets or cuts to different, I proved that that's not true. I mean, who would have thought in the height of the war, when we had Iraq and Afghanistan going, you know, intelligence is an important thing. And I knew that. And I wanted to making sure that they had everything they needed. But when I looked at it, back then, you know, you say the word terrorism, people would show up and throw cash in your office. And so there was just a lot of mistakes made on spending in the government writ large. And I was able to go through and merge programs and merge training programs and make IT interoperable. I know that sounds crazy. They had all these legacy systems. And through all of that, we found about $7.5 billion in efficiencies. So same number of folks going downrange doing good things. Same results at the end of the day. We just did it for a lot more efficiently. And I do believe we're going to have to do that in every single department of the U.S. government.
How could we have a government as big as it is and as big as the bureaucracy is? And it's good that it's big. It's by definition inefficient. So therefore, you have to have somebody who's constantly doing that. Am I wrong?
You are absolutely right. I mean, one of the largest, you know, explosions in personnel was the Defense Department civilians. Probably going to have to take a hard look at that. You know, what do you need all those civilians there? And, you know, is that the most important use of our money there? I was talking to some senior field officers like yourself and some flag officers who are lamenting the fact that because of all this civilian explosion at the Pentagon, when they were originally trying to plan for certain assistance in Ukraine, like, you know, intelligence and how you train them logistically, how you make them self-sustainable, they being the Ukrainians. They said, you know, we were working until 2 and 3 in the morning, not because, you know, the workload was such as that demanded that. It was the bureaucracy that they built inside the Pentagon. They had to go through all these civilians and departments and inboxes and outboxes. They said it was the most maddening experience of their careers, and they hadn't quite seen it before. And that tells me lots of room to go in and make this thing efficient and get rid of folks who have I used to say too many people had red cards and not enough people had a green card to say yes to things. And, you know, the red cards, they're easy to say no all the time. Those people are irritating. We just got to figure out what the right tempo is in a place like the Pentagon. I bet we can save a lot of money. And we have to. You know, this the Biden administration put in, added $7 trillion to the national debt, and it's just one term, which is unheard of, breathtakingly bad. And by the way, that means when they have to reissue bonds, they have the interest rate they're going to pay makes the interest on the national debt, I think it's going to be over $1 trillion, just the interest payment, which means that's bigger than the entire Department of Defense. That's a problem we have to get our arms around.
Wow. Well, there's more to discuss about our nation's challenges, and Mike is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, often. And then take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
This hour of Frontlines of Freedom is brought to you by HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net is an online resource and information center dedicated to the welfare of those who have sacrificed for the freedoms, ideals, and morals we Americans hold dear to our hearts. At HelpVet.net, find information on benefit-related issues from education, healthcare, military pay, retirement, VA loans, and resources on education, finance, legal, health and wellness, the military life, moving and housing, travel and entertainment, and much, much more. Visit HelpVet.net, HelpVet.net.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Army veteran Congressman Mike Rogers. Mike, I don't think we can talk about challenges of our nation and not talk about our southern border. I guess our northern border is a problem too, but nothing compared to our southern border. Give us an overview on that. It's got to be just plain. What's the benefit to the United States for us having an open border?
Well, there is
any benefit.
No benefit. You know, you just heard New York City say that the cost of illegal immigrants that they are housing and feeding is going to exceed, think of this, the entire budget of the fire department and the police department and human services combined. What? What are we doing to ourselves? Why is that a benefit to the United States? And by the way, we're seeing this huge influx of, they call them OTMs, other than Mexicans, Chinese, Russian, Iranians. None of those countries have good intent toward the United States. Now, it doesn't mean every one of them is coming here to do us harm. Some of them are economic refugees. But what it does mean is you got to stop that flow and you got to stop the folks who believe that this is the right way to come into the country. It's wrong. And so now we have all of these people in our country. We don't know who they are. We don't know what their intentions are. And there were 1.7 million what they call gotaways, meaning we don't even have a clue who they are. They got away from Customs and Border Protection coming across the border, and they don't know who they are. They don't know where they went. They don't know what their intentions are. And we know that we've caught one terrorist who was building a bomb who was attempting to kill Jews in the United States. We know that Iranian nationals have gone up. We know that we've caught over 200 on the terrorist watch list this year alone, right? Those are the ones we caught. There's 1.7 million people we didn't catch. And by the way, if you're trained to do something here by any nation state, what's your goal? Not to get stopped at the border, right? You want to not get caught. And so I worry about that ratio. When you start doing the ratios on these, Denny, it's bad. And by the way, that's not even getting to the point of what they're doing with fentanyl. China is giving the precursors to the drug cartels. They're producing it and bringing it in the United States. In Michigan, killed 3,000 people. I mean, if that isn't, I mean, that's as many people we lost roughly on 9/11. Think of that. I mean, this is a massive problem, and it is maddening that this administration just lets it go. I mean, we don't know if they're bringing disease in. How would we know? We don't know if they're terrorists. We don't know. We don't know if they're criminals. Matter of fact, in the state of Michigan, the Oakland County Sheriff came out and said illegal gangs that came across the border in Mexico are now operating theft crews, doing home invasions and burglaries and things in Oakland County, Michigan. So this is no longer just a southern border problem. It's in our neighborhoods.
Well, how could it not be with all the people that have crossed? And even only 1% of them are evil. 1% of a million is 10,000?
Yeah.
I mean,
think of it. I mean, here's the thing. We don't know. And letting this happen is encouraging more. There's, I guess, another caravan of thousands of people moving its way through Mexico. I mean, here's the good news. We could fix this right away, Dennis. We could remain in Mexico, number one. Number two, change amnesty quickly so that it says, listen, if you haven't gone through the process of even applying for a visa in your home country, you're automatically turned away. So remain in Mexico, automatically turned away. And here's what else I would do. I don't know if there's, I can't find anything that says you got to be a lawyer to hear these adjudication cases. They're not U.S. citizens, mind you, coming across the border. My argument is, you know, there's a lot of retired military folks, officers like you, others. If they said, hey, your country needs you here again, police officers, even lawyers, you know, if you
gotta have, even them, yeah,
would come down and knock these cases out in about a day and a half. Right. Yes. The problem is they say they have to let them in because you can't get a date for adjudication for 8 years. I'd start a volunteer corps tomorrow. Say everybody that wants to do this, you go down, you get vetted, make sure you're not, crazy or a criminal. And then let's go. Let's see what the facts are. What does the law say? What do the facts say? Here's your solution. Next.
Mike, that makes way too much sense. And how could anything that our government does? I won't go there. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Army vet Mike Rogers. Mike, let's cover one other area and do it quickly. Israel. What should we be doing or not doing there?
We should support our Israeli allies. Listen, the most brutal terrorist attack that we have probably ever seen in its sheer brutality. And we don't have to recount all the personal horrific stories, the way they killed men, women, and children. And by the way, they ripped them out of their homes, dragged them across the border, and now are using them as human shields, which, by the way, is a war crime. We need to support Israel in the best way we can. We should give them intelligence. If they need aid for the Palestinian refugees, if we can possibly help with that. And we should put pressure on some of these Arab countries in the region. Start taking these refugees. Why won't you take them?
That's a big question.
I don't understand. They're saying you got to go in and feed them and give them water. Why don't you take them?
Well, indeed, when Israel was formed in the 1940s, why weren't these refugees taken in by the other Muslim countries around them? Yeah. And why won't they take them now?
Well, yeah. In fact, the administration should be putting pressure on these countries. Listen, you guys are the ones who are screaming and saying how terrible. Well, then take these refugees.
Yeah.
Let's put up tent cities in the Sinai. The reason Egypt tells you, and this should tell you a lot, they say, well, we can't have Hamas sneaking in there because they're terrorists. Oh, really?
Okay, that works. Okay, Mike, I know that you know that you have decided that you are not done serving our nation, and you've decided to run for an office you have not run for before. I want you to talk to us about that. What are you running for? Why are you doing it? How can people get involved? How can people help you?
You know, I looked at this, Denny, when I left Congress voluntarily. I thought, I'm not supposed to be here for 30 years in the same office. I do think it changes the way people think. And so I went out in the private sector, and I thought my political days were behind me of elected office. And boy, when I woke up one day about a year and a half ago, my wife and I said, man, everything seems broken. We are definitely on the wrong track in this country. We have serious problems. And the good news is we have solutions for all of them. This isn't just complaining. I have real solutions, both for making sure we have people who are qualified to show up for our military, to close the southern border. We just talked about that. How do we get after the massive government spending that's costing your listener $700 a month in groceries, home goods, and gasoline increases? All that's inflation given to you by the Biden administration. We can go all through this. And by the way, the entanglement we see in the Middle East is not engagement. That's entanglement, because this administration said we are not going to be energy independent. We're going to be dependent on Iran or Venezuela or Saudi Arabia. All of this is preventable, and all of this we can change. And I thought, you know, I have the capability to change these things if I'm there on the first day. I know who to call. I know who to call at the Department of Justice, say, hey, you know, we have cleanup on aisle 9. We're going to get this done. I know how to put the right people in the Senate together to work on this border problem the first day and have a relationship there that I can call them and talk. That's going to be important because we don't have a lot of time. China is on the rise, and they want our economy, and they want to dominate our economy. We're either going to let them do it or not. This is a destiny election. We get to choose our destiny. You want the government picking your car for you, telling you you can't own a truck? You know, they're going to argue that they want your gas stove. They're going to yank that out of your house. If that's who we want to become in America, we're in a lot of trouble. I know that's not who we are. I know that's not how we get where we have to go. And I know I have the skill set to go into Washington and turn that thing around and get us back on track to be the most amazing country in the world, because we are and we can be, but we're going to have to work at it.
Well, that's an understatement, and we have to do that. Mike, you're running for U.S. Senate in the state of Michigan. How can people plug into you, learn more, donate, support you, endorse you?
Yeah, thank you. And I need all of those things. I can't do this by myself. You know, the one thing we learned in the military, that there's loners and there's leaders. And Denny, you certainly were a leader in the military. And I was a leader, and I learned my leadership skills in the military. This is the time for all of us to be together. All of us can be leaders. And you can do that by helping us out and signing up and helping send us a little bit of money, time, energy. Tell your friends at RogersForSenate.com. That's Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, for Senate.com.
Brother, thank you. Thank you for your willingness to step up and run again, to serve again. We need you.
Thank you, my friend. I need you.
And by the way, happy Veterans Day.
Thank you. And happy Veterans Day to you. Thank you for your service.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with businessman and author Ed Fuller. Glenn Quinton Roberts will discuss last weekend's Service Academy football games. And Marines Gil and Skip will discuss border and books. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, then grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.